to talk a little bit from a Jewish perspective. I think the last time I spoke here was 2 years ago, and it was at my synagogue. And we talked about it from a different point of view, so I thought I would talk a little bit about temple times and biblical times in terms of the Jewish relationship with usury and our economic history, and then to tell you two stories, one a little longer than the other. One is a community story from my synagogue and our relationship with money and how we have actively worked to change that, and then a personal story of what it was like to be a leader, or is like to be a leader, struggling with your own personal relationship with that. So when I saw the title for this as usury, I thought, okay, great, we put the Jews up here to talk about money. And I always just feel uncomfortable when that starts, and I think that's not just my own stereotype. Well, now you guys all laugh because it's true, but also that there's this long history of that stereotype and that relationship beginning back in temple times, and how we offered sacrifice and how we received forgiveness from God, right? So we'd go to the temple, you'd travel from all over Palestine or Israel at the time, and you couldn't bring your animal, so you brought the money and you changed it for an exchange or something, then offered the sacrifice. Now, I know in the Christian tradition, the description of these money changers is different than in the Jewish tradition. So I can only speak from my own tradition, but Jews don't usually understand that whole Christian teaching about why it was important for Jesus to kick those guys out. But for us, most of our story was, well, of course, you can't bring those doves from 100 miles away. You need those. And I think part of that is because Jews are forbidden to make money off of other Jews. You have to lend with a full heart. That means you can also get paid back, but you can't make any money on top of that money. But non-Jews, you can make whatever you need to make off them. And so there's this whole sort of relationship there that starts. And also the other part of it is that sacrifice starts changing in that time. So even though we're telling the story of temple sacrifices, the marketplace becomes more interesting than the sacrifice. And that for us, that wasn't really a problem. The way the Jews handled that is they brought the Torah out and read it in the marketplace. And so we read Torah on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays because those were prime market days. So the Jewish relationship was, okay, we'll come to the people, rather than sort of have a problem with consumerism. So from our very beginning, it wasn't a negative thing. And then once we're cast out and we go off and the way we connected across all these different cultures we were stigmatized is that we connected through money, because if you were another Jew, then we were family, and I could change with you and I could trust you. And so money was a point of trust for us with one another, even if it stigmatized us with other people. And then back in that story one last time, which is that offering of sacrifice, that the way you were absolved from God is you had to have money, right? So you're absolved from God and you were forgiven through sin. So it was each according to his sin you were forgiven, which is different than in our Exodus story when we're building the Mishkan, when we're building the Holy Tabernacle, we're giving according to our gifts. So in our tradition and in many of your traditions, we hold both of giving and creating according to our gifts, and also manifesting a commodified approach to God and spirituality. So this, I was talking about this opposite of like usury or making money on top of money and our relationship with it, and then generosity, that those both of those things are part of our tradition. And so I'm going to talk about this other part of it too, is that connection with other Jews, that we start emphasizing this concept that we are family, and the way we're family is not by what we believe. That we didn't have a faith statement for a long time. We had a birth statement. So I know you're a Jew because your mother's a Jew. He can believe whatever he wants, but since his mother's a Jew, he's a Jew. And that becomes the hierarchy of how we understand each other. That's different than many other faiths. And so it's very easy to confuse our relationship with faith or God or how we manifest the holy work in this world when what makes you belong is how you were born in your blood. And I call that blood privilege, that we you're a part of community because of your blood, not because of your acts and your heart. And so I think that my tradition, at least, is in a journey right now of trying to reconcile blood privilege with faith privilege, and how do we rediscover a relationship with God. And it gets a lot harder after the Holocaust. That once you feel that believing in something bigger than yourself only gets you killed, it's very hard to reclaim that. So going from there, I want to tell you about our story and our community story, that for Jews, in order to be part of a community, you have certain rules of what a synagogue looks like and how you fund that synagogue. And I've talked to this before, but you pay dues, which is that you make a pledge and you pay it. And if you don't pay it, we send you a bill. And if you don't pay the bill, we basically have like Jewish collections. So you will get kicked out. You get a certified letter and say you are no longer part of our community, no matter your birth privilege or your faith privilege. Yeah, I can see some horrified faces. Yes.
You have a sergeant of arms?
Yes. He's called the ombudsman. And he has a very long memory. So then you can't join another community. And this is like airing our laundry here. It's painful, but you can't join another congregation unless you have paid that debt, or the congregation has forgiven it. So Peter doesn't pay his debt to me. He goes, fine, I'm going to another synagogue. That synagogue can call me and say, hey, Rabbi, did Peter pay his bill? And I say, no, he didn't. He does not get accepted into that community. Rough. Yeah, go ahead.
Is that very
So Reform and Conservative Judaism are operating on that system. Orthodox Judaism has a more nuanced approach to it. And this is not every synagogue, but this has been the case for synagogues since, probably the 30s. Till about 10 years ago, when you started seeing alternative models. There was a time in the 70s where people broke off and started their own thing, but Orthodox Judaism, you're not required like that, but there's a tradition of tithing that's more like other churches. So the tithing is sort of expected. You can't handle money on the Sabbath, so that complicates a little bit. But 68% of American Jews are Reform Jews. So once you have the conservative in there, you're talking about most Jewish institutions functioning like this. And we know it's broken. We know it's broken. And yet, we're part of this large system where I went to a very expensive seminary. And, I'll be paying that for years. And I think between my husband and I, we have $200,000 of student loans, and we've been working for 10 years. And, you know, it's part of the system. And then rabbis are unionized, so we get really expensive for the synagogue. So the longer I've been at it, hopefully I'm a little better at it each year, the more expensive I come because I'm part of a union. And if I leave that union, so do all the rights and privileges that are mostly, primarily associated with quality of life, which is mostly about how much you get paid. So my congregation, under the sage advice of Peter Block, talking to me, started getting exposed to what this work is here. We started exploring our relationship to one another. I think I have to say that, and I don't mean that in this pithy way. I mean it was real. We had a facility that some of you may have been at. It was 30,000 square feet. It was 7 acres. It was Amberley Village. It was huge. It was used, you know, once or twice a week. We'd fill that space, and the other times it'd be empty. And so what we did is we started talking about the stories that it held, and then we started talking about the stories that needed to come next, and that that this building was our inheritance, and what we could do if we had enough, and not enough meaning the walls that contained us, but enough money, enough freedom. Could we break away from that space? And so we started a visioning process with our congregation that led to the sale of that building. And we sold the building on the promise that we were going to change. And change didn't mean that now we're in an office park in Blue Ash, which we are. Change meant true freedom, and freedom to re-explore a relationship with God so that I didn't have to track down whoever it was for cash anymore, that was the ultimate goal, that we could just exist for who we are, and if that meant a smaller budget, if that meant a smaller place, that was okay. And hey, if it worked the other way, that was great too, but it was not about building more walls, it was about building longer tables, like that saying goes. So we do it. We move, and they say, okay, if you're moving this building, and there's a few of my people here, if you move this building, you're going to lose a third of your congregation. We lost 10 families in the move, so that was 3% of the congregation. And we gained about 20 members. So that went well. And then this high holidays, I went up there and I said, now we're forgiving your debt. If you have owed anything to our synagogue, it is now free. And from now on, we're going to start moving towards a new way of how we relate with one another, and that we're going to choose God and then choose relationships. And from there, you will be generous. You will make sure it's going to be, I'm going to trust it. They freak out. Well, the young ones love it, right? The young ones are like, thank you. And the old ones are like, you can't trust us. They can't trust us. We're not going to give as much. It's not going to be that way. And I said, yeah, I'm going to trust you guys. And we'll see. I mean, this started in September. So we're just sort of starting to see. I don't know if it will really work. I have to be honest. But the message that I share and I work with in our community was that first, no building. First, get rid of the walls that are separating us, that's keeping us bound to the having to always pay for things. And then the second was get rid of the system that's perpetuating that. And the next level that we're working towards is no more membership. That if you are in our community, you're part of our community. And I don't not see your dying parent because you're not on my list. That requires a lot of faith from a lot of people. And for many of you, that's sort of how your faith institutions already work. But for us, it's a revolution. And that means that there's loss and that there's fear and that there's a crazy amount of hope. That for us, selling our building reminded us back to that Exodus concept that faith is portable. And that our story is bigger than just one community, one building, one space, one generation. It's bigger than that. And then letting go, that's keeping walking into faith and living into it by saying we trust your generosity. So while that's all happening, I also asked people on that same high holiday to take the next 10 days, that 10 days of awe, and release some debt within their life, whether it is financial or it is emotional, but to release it. At the same time, so I'm preaching this, and I'm feeling powerful, and I'm getting yelled at, and I'm yelling too, I'm doing too, and I had this car that I bought when I first graduated from school, and I paid it off, and I have two kids now, so it's time to move up to my Subaru Forester, and so I decide, we're going to move up to this car, and I'm going to sell it to the woman who cleans our house. And I said, take your time. No interest. I don't care if it takes you 5 years to pay it back. Just pay it. So this money's coming in slowly. And I go to my husband, and I say, we have to forgive this debt. We have to forgive it. And we were saving the money. My dad lives in Europe. And we were saving the money for our family to go visit him. So that was the car. Whenever that was paid off, we were going to go see him. And it starts killing me. It starts killing me that this woman owes us any money. And so if you don't know me, I'm like naturally just sort of fiery. So I argue with my husband a lot over this. And he's incredibly generous, but we had agreed on a fair point and a fair price and all these things. And yet for me to know that someone owed me something that I didn't need, I wanted it. And it had a consequence. But I go up there, she's standing with her mop, and I was like, I can't, our relationship is breaking because you owe me money. And she's like, it's not that much, Miriam. I was like, I know, but I need to forgive this. And we can't talk about it again. Like, it's yours, here's the title, just it's done. And for me, it was this huge weight off. It just freed me in this really beautiful way, and I didn't like feel like I was a better human being or like think that I was great, and it doesn't mean that I didn't go like spend money the next day and that I wasn't part of a messed up system. But I didn't go see my dad this year. That was what we decided, and there was consequences to it. But that we all struggle with these personal expressions of our great ideals. And I felt as a leader, slowly but surely, I have to take these steps to not just ask my community to do things, but also me and my family to do it together. And, do you mind if I tell you? So I was telling people, I'm telling this story, he told me, that I think that all people in some way, myself especially right now, is standing on a cliff. And my congregation has been standing on that cliff for 3 years of looking out and thinking, I'm going to leap. And Jews don't trust well. Like, we like to plan. We're great strategists. We're very organized as a people. And the idea of leaping and assuming that there's a net to hold you is really, I think that's scary for all people, but for us, it's really there. And that I, for my community, kept asking them to leap, 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 trust, 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 it's going to be okay. And then personally also take those leaps. And this, I'm sure all of us in some way are standing at some kind of precipice about how am I going to break whatever cycle I'm in, or how am I going to trust in the net and believe that it's there, or create some kind of community collection of net like that that can help us reclaim our relationship with God and believe that the visions that we're setting forth in the world are coming from a place of love and connection and relationship building, and that they're absolutely possible.